welcome to His Holy Church X Space. We have another show, which we try to do every Sunday at 5 Pacific time. And today's topic is progressivism. There was a recent speech done by Clarence Thomas, one of the Supreme Court justices of the United States, who talked about progressivism. And he mentioned all kinds of things. I was going to get a copy of the text. They didn't have an official one yet. By the airing of this program, I could have pulled off the transcripts from the videos. But you can look it up. He gave it in April of 2026. It's an interesting speech. But I thought that it would be a good topic because of where we're at in Leviticus 10. Leviticus 10 is talking about a governmental system set up by Moses, which is literally the antithesis of progressivism. And we'll open this up to questions as soon as we get through some of the basics of this. But it would, you know, I could actually go on for hours and hours. We go into the whole history of progressivism. And of course, if we look at just the basic definition today, you know, progressivism is defined by modern media as a political and social reform philosophy that advocates for advancing the public good, promoting equality, improving society through government actions, new ideas, and modern methods. It focuses on addressing social ills such as poverty, inequality, and corruption, and fostering justice for marginalized groups. It actually does all that in reverse, but it sounds good when you read that definition. And of course, it's political. That's one of the first things they say. It's political and social reform. And of course, socialism is a political and economic system. When you put in that word political, that suggests that would mean that it's of or relating to or dealing with structure or affairs of government, politics, and the state. You know, and Washington said something about government is like fire. It is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. And that's pretty much what government is. It's a tool, but it almost always requires force by somebody who is in power. Government is, as something political, includes the act of process of governing, especially the control and administration of public policy in a political unit. It would mean someone would include somebody who exercises authority, that political authority, and they would have police powers, policy powers, and they'd be enforcing their policies. So first thing right out of the box, progressivism is about force. And that force is ultimately going to be wielded by somebody they call government. Now, there's lots of different ways in which you can establish that government. But the kingdom of God, most of the power was in the hands of the people. The purse strings were in the hands of the people. The individual purse of each family was sacred. You couldn't touch it. And none of the ministers could force the contributions of the people, the ministers of that government. As a matter of fact, the ministers of the government got nothing but free will offerings. In progressivism, almost all of the sacrifices of the people are forced. They're compelled by that political power. It's driven by force. The other thing that we also see in this referring to, it's driven by belief that society can be improved through deliberate, again, there's that force, deliberate reform, moving beyond the status quo to more equitable conditions. Well, if you're doing great, if you're a successful businessman or farmer or rancher or, you know, whatever it is that you do for a living and you're successful at that, it is their goal to go beyond that status quo. Not to make you more wealthy, more successful, but chances are to deplete what you've produced. Because they're into that force is going to include redistribution of wealth. That's what they mean by making things more equitable. It's very interesting they throw this word around, equitable, and a person can, I mean, it shows up numerous times. There's a thing called equitable conversion. There's a system of a legal system. I won't say a system of law, but it is a system of laws, but it's a legal system whereby you contract into it, and that is called equity. And America was mostly, the beginnings of America were founded on what they call common law, which is the law of the land. Some people say that equity is the law of the sea. It looks like the law of the sea, but it is not really the law of the sea. The law of the sea operates in similar ways to equity, but if you look at the Judiciary Act of 1789, it tells you, it makes provisions for equity in America. And equity is basically kind of a civil contractual law. It's not really law. Bigelow writes that it winks at the law. And it shows up as a remedy when there is no remedy at common law. And there's quite a few relationships you could have that common law just does not provide a remedy. But it's usually when you enter into activities that are not natural. Like you decide to all have one purse. They mention that in the Bible. And that, of course, is what progressivism is all having one purse. Your money is not your money, privately owned. Your labor is not your labor, privately owned. You are now entering the progressive collective. And you do that. Now, why would anybody do that? Well, to obtain benefits. And where do those benefits come? Well, they come from government, right? Well, they actually come from your neighbor. Because the government doesn't have anything until it takes away from other people. But we'll get more into the psychology of progressivism as we go down. But so it's operating in force because it's political. It's a belief system. And of course, most of the time, progressivism moves in the direction of socialism. And of course, there's an old saying, socialism is the religion you get when you have no religion. Now, you tell that to most people and they're not going to get what you say. But when you actually know the definition of religion 200 years ago, or the definition of religion at the time of James, at least from the point of view of James, who wrote the book of James in the Bible, that religion was how you took care of the needy of society. 200 years ago, it was the pious performance, pious meaning to do with a patrimonial duty, the pious performance of your duty to God and your fellow man. Well, your duty to God is it's God the Father. That's where you pray. You pray to God the Father. You don't pray to God the government. You pray to God your Father, and you live in hope that other people will be there for you, and the way you create relationships where other people might be there for you is you live your life as if you care about other people, as if you loved your neighbor as yourself. That is not a part of progressivism. They will virtue signal that they love their neighbor, but the way they love usually requires sacrifice. I mean, if you have children, you love the children, that's going to require sacrifice. Whatever you love, it's going to cost you. And so progressivism, if they love you, it's going to cost too. But in progressivism, they're going to use the political power to take away from people they think can afford to help you, and they're going to do it by force. They're not expected to help you, at least in the beginning. They will get somebody who they think is better off than everybody else, and they'll take something away from him. But because they all enter into this agreement, this equitable system of law, where that's the rule for everybody in that system can be forced to contribute. And everybody who enters into that system to begin with, rich people don't want to usually enter into that system, except very clever rich people, because they know that it will weaken you and it will make it so that they can eventually seize the reins of government and you will be under their tyrannical authority. But it is basically progressivism requires that you desire what somebody else has produced so that you can give it away or receive it at somebody else's expense. And if you give it away, then you gain the credit for giving it away. We didn't talk about it much when we went through Leviticus 10, but the Nebad and Abihu, who were struck dead because of strange fire, which we explain in that recording on Leviticus 10, but they evidently were arrogant. And one of the dangers, and I said also in that show that the priests were never mediators between God and man. What they were sometimes mediators. Everybody gave to their minister, and their minister gave to his minister, etc., in this network of tens, hundreds, and thousands. And they gave to them to take care of the needy of society. One of the first altars they built was an altar to take care of the widows and orphans after a major war with the Amaleks. And they had a lot of people that were injured. They had some widows, and these all had to be taken care of. So they built the altar of Jehovah Nissi to take care of the needy from that battle. But then society itself eventually needs some sort of social safety net, and that's what Moses was building with his system of altars of clay and stone. He was building a system. So people funded it by free will offerings. Progressivism does not depend on free will offerings. They depend on forced offerings. That's why they're political. Now, to some degree, the altars of Israel are political too, but political power is in the hands of the individual people. They choose how much to give and when to give. Whatever label you put on the offering is not important. All the offerings are free will, and they're giving to the minister they think will do the best job for society. Progressivism wants to do that job for society, you know, deal with the social ills and the inequality and the poverty and the, you know, the widows and orphans and needy of society. But they use force. Moses used free will offerings. So the political power was 90% in the hands of the people. For a short period of time, what the people gave their ministers or their priests, whatever you want to call them, what they gave them, once they gave it up entirely. And now it was in their hands as to how, you know, the minister's hands on how to use those funds. And that might be 10% of the funds that go out. And if they don't do good with it, you don't have to give them next week. You don't have to wait 2 years for an election day. You don't have to wait for an investigation. You can go to your minister and you say, what did you do with that money I gave you? And they said, well, we started a Somali daycare. Well, I'm not giving you any more money. You're out of a job. You're fired. But they had that power. The people had that power. In the systems of progressivism today, you don't have that power. And it can get very extreme. Like the people in Iran, they decided to go the progressive way back in the 1920s. And of course, you know, it's always gradual a little bit at first, but then it got more and more dependent. And it weakened the people so much that they were easily taken over by a foreign group of Islamists, the Ayatollah and the soldiers that he brought in from Afghanistan and other places that people were pushing them out in a lot of cases. And he brought them in, and that helped him. And then, of course, he brainwashed the naive college students who were already being taught things like progressivism and socialism and communism. And they, being foolish and naive and not understanding the nature of things, they went that way. And now they become so weak that if they protest at all, they're liable to get shot. No, they can have peaceful protests that are organized and you see a couple dozen people out there marching. But if the people really protest, and even the statistics that come out of Iran's own government that were secretly leaked to, the press, only about 10, maybe 15% of the people want that regime in power. 80% of the people and more do not want the regime in power. They want to see it overthrown, but they have no power to do it. Several reasons why. Well, they're disarmed, but they're also not organized. And they're stuck. That they're completely divided as a people, except for maybe their hate of the government, which is usually not enough. It wouldn't have been enough to win the American Revolution. You had to have a nobler cause. You have to have a nobler idea. They tried revolution in France, and that was a mixed spirit of the French Revolution, which ended up getting them Napoleon Bonaparte. And more and more war and guillotines and starvation and all sorts of bad things. But progressivism itself is a revolutionary thing, but it's not a new thing. And that's one of the things that we should look at. But there are disparities in society. It says more equitable conditions is one of the things that they're looking for. In a progressive thought generally means reducing disparity in social, economic, political outcomes by the government power to exercise authority. They're going to force the removal of these disparities according to what they think is right. And it won't be the individual people. At best, it will be a majority vote, 51% of the people, but chances are it's going to be the bureaucracy. And we've seen in America recently how corrupt bureaucracies if your congressmen and senators are supposed to be policing the NGOs and all these charitable, USAID, etc., and they're getting kickbacks, guess what? They won't want to get rid of them. Even when they saw that the largest percentage of the kickbacks were going to the Democratic Party, many people in the Republican Party did not want to get rid of the corruption. They fought the cancellation of some of these organizations that were clearly taking huge amounts of graft and millions of dollars out of the taxpayers and using it for their own purpose, because enough of the Republicans were also getting a cut that they resisted that. They didn't want it exposed. They're not all corrupt, but there are enough that the majority of them are corrupt, receiving some sort of benefit, And of course, we can go into, you know, how the Democratic Party operates, how the Republican Party operates. And it's really kind of a uniparty system. And that's the quick explanation, because it's all about power, individual power, individual wealth. If you've gone to get a congressman's wage or a senator's wage, and you end up being a multimillionaire in a few short terms, something's wrong, to say the least. But we're going to be constantly looking at this progressivism and comparing it a little bit at a time to the kingdom of God. Progressivism claims to emphasize fairness, equity is what they call it. That's the term they use, over identical treatment and equality. This means it does not believe all people are created equal, and that the power of government will decide what is fair and what is not fair, what is good and what is evil. So they're going to decide for you what is good and evil. And by the time you decide that the government is evil, you've lost so much of your power. Again, like I say, they divide the people. And this is what Babylon did. We talk about Babylon, where they confuse the language. That's what they say. And people draw pictures where suddenly everybody's speaking a different language and they can't communicate anymore. Well, you can be watching the news for the last 10, 15 years, and you can see these people just don't understand. These people just don't understand. And you can ask them simple questions like, what is a woman? That's a good example, but there's a lot of other examples. And they can't answer. And they have these strange, convoluted answers that don't really make any sense, that are just nonsense. You know, and women perverting the natural use of their womanhood. And men becoming promiscuous, and families breaking down, half the families end in divorce. Cheating on your spouse becomes common. All this happened in Rome because Rome was developing progressivism. They were going, you know, Augustus Caesar was going to fix things. He was going to get rid of corruption. He actually, when he ran for election, because you could vote for him, and he didn't always win the election for the president of Rome. That was one of the offices he held. As emperor, he was always emperor for his entire reign, but emperor is just the commander-in-chief of the military. And the military actually made money because they could go and take spoils. They could kill out a tribe and sell all the women and children into slavery and keep the money. That was a direct reorganization by the uncle of Caesar, so that the army could become self-supporting. In the Bible, they're not supposed to do that in Israel. They're not supposed to profit from it. Although I think some of the wars that we've seen lately, hey, you could, almost in all cases, there's a certain amount of self-defense, but there's also an element of making a profit off the war. And you say, well, how is that? Well, that's another discussion. You can ask questions about that later. But it really, the problem is the fact that Israel, modern Israel, thinks that progressive economy, socialism, is a good thing. They've put that in place. They have social welfare through the state. They also have a draft. There was not to be a draft originally. When David was starting to implement a draft, he realized that was a mistake and didn't do it. There wasn't supposed to be a central temple. But then David started building it, but then he put it off because he realized that was a mistake. Solomon didn't realize that that was a mistake. But anyway, let's get back to progressivism. So they claim they're looking for fairness, but they will claim that systemic barriers will be dismantled by that governmental force. Well, systemic barriers now, according to many progressivists is the fact that you're wealthy and I'm not. That's a systemic barrier. And they want to remove that barrier and take over. We just had guys getting interviews, major interviews, who say that stealing from the wealthy is should be legal. And they've actually even passed laws in some municipalities where if you caught with drugs, if you're caught stealing, well, we've had it for quite a while, is that you could steal as long as it was under $600, nobody would arrest you. $600 in value. Well, somebody was actually stealing. I thought it was kind of funny. They were stealing something. And the cop stopped them, was arresting them. And they actually pleaded that it's not worth $600. And they said, yes, it is. This totals more than $600. And the crook said, not on sale. So he says, well, we don't use the sale price to calculate the $600. It's normally worth $600, so you're still under arrest. But that's how crazy it gets, how insane it gets. What about thou shalt not steal? But of course, that same person who's shoplifting and stealing is probably also getting SNAP benefits and welfare, because they're not declaring the income from shoplifting and stealing. They're saying, oh, well, we need this help because we're poor. And being poor becomes a virtue. And that's just not the case. Because if you create that where the poor, being poor, it becomes a virtue, then people will work at trying to be poor so that they can get free stuff. And we already have that. We've had that for years and years and years. If you have one child out of wedlock, you get a certain amount of money. If you have two children out of wedlock, you get more money. And so some women have two, three, four kids. Even they want to have kids later, you know, when they get into their late 30s, they still want to have kids, because when the kid grows up, then they don't get the welfare anymore. But what often happens is the kid grows up and goes on welfare, and the mom lives with the kid. And the mom is now older and unemployable, never had a work experience, so they're all on welfare. So you have a whole house full of people all overweight on welfare. And people will say, well, that's not always the case. Well, if it's the case one time, it should be fixed, because you're destroying the lives of those poor people. You're making them poor in financially and in work ethic and in morality and in social skills and everything else. That's why you see these fights break out, unbelievable fights. These are people that don't have regular jobs. They live off of the system. And what, you know, we can go back to my favorite Polybius quote, where that if you develop an appetite for benefits and the habit of receiving them at the expense of others and depending for your livelihood on the property of others, that you will degenerate into what? Perfect savages. Because you won't have any morality, and you will not teach morality. If you have children, you won't teach morality to them. Your kids are going to grow up. Chances are they're going to grow up and become more likely to end up in prison than a regular child in a two-parent family, etc. Progressivism promises you a lot of things, but what they deliver is disaster. But people, once they accept the idea that progressivism is going to provide them with a utopia, they can't let it go. They want to believe it. And because, again, it's a belief system. It is the religion of the unreligious. And now, to be fair, if you go amongst Christians or Jews or Muslims, you'll find a lot of people that think they're good Christians, but they're just as immoral. They're just as covetous. You know, that's why their marriages break up, etc. You will still find moral people around, fairly moral people around, but they're becoming more and more the minority, and the majority is what will rule the nation. So in again, in essence, if one of the systemic barriers, if you make more money than me, if you produce more value than me, then we need to take some of the value away from you and give it to me, because I didn't produce much. I was playing video games and drinking beers, but I didn't produce as much as you, but I should still get as much as you, because being poor is not my fault, even though it is your fault. You made lots of life choices, poor life choices. So the essence of this system is that all rights are by government suffrage. They're not by God. You were not endowed by God. And like that was one of the things pointed out in Clarence's speech, is, and Woodrow, we mentioned it, I think, even on the show on Leviticus 10, is that Woodrow Wilson believed that the idea, Jefferson's idea, that we are endowed by God with certain rights is a lot of nonsense. He thought that was nonsense. But he got into power because the people were divided. And the people were divided because Theodore Roosevelt didn't get the nomination, so he started his own party, the Bull Moose Party, and then he split the vote, and the Woodrow Wilson, who was the least popular, got the Democratic vote and got in power. You ended up with the Federal Reserve, the United Nations, income tax. Originally the income tax, the 16th Amendment, was for corporations. It wasn't for individual income tax. That wouldn't come later until another Democrat got into power. And there's two ways. They divide the people or they create a war. And then you end up getting the wrong person in power. But you get the wrong person in power because the people don't see clearly. If you don't see your error, if you don't see your covetous practices as an immoral practice, there will be other things you do not see. And so, you know, we mentioned, I think it was in the last show, you know, that the Pope has suddenly been shooting zingers, and several cardinals and some archbishops have been criticizing Trump. And I pointed out that 90% of the social welfare received by Catholics in the United States, and probably in Canada, maybe more so in Canada and other countries, they receive it not from the church, that does not provide a social safety net, but from people like Trump, from the government, from men who exercise authority, even though we pointed out all the time, Christ made it clear that we are not to be like the governments who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. So with that statement alone, which we find in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, as well as many other statements that Christ makes, progressivism, socialism, communism are all anti-Christ. They're anti, you cannot be a socialist and a believer in Christ. A lot of people think they can, but socialism by its nature is a political and economic system, just like progressivism is a political system driven by the belief that society can be improved through deliberate, that's forceful reform. Compelled reform. That's not the way of Moses. That's not the way of Jesus Christ. It's not the way of Abraham. It is the way of Nimrod. Nimrod, that says he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Well, in our study on Nimrod, and you can go, there's a link at Preparing You, where you can read the article, that the word there for hunter it can mean hunter or venison, but it also can mean victuals or provisions. And it's food. It can actually just, it's even translated food. He was a mighty provider. And the word before there can be instead of the Lord. He wasn't providing by the way of the Lord. If he was providing by the way of the Lord, he would be providing by free will offerings, but he wasn't. He was providing by forced offerings. And how did he run his Babylonic government? Well, he appointed men from the top. He appointed governors. We saw this with Esau. And those governors became rulers. I mean, you could see it with Star Wars. If you dismantle the Republic, how will you maintain control? Well, the local governors will do it. And so he didn't go around and tax everybody. His governors would have their lieutenants and their captains, and they would tax everybody. And we showed that in Genesis, that if you were this idolater, that you were a part of that system. And you were answerable under, they would have symbols for this governor and symbols for this captain and this lieutenant. And those symbols were often statues, and you would have that statue when you went to collect the taxes. And it proved that you were actually the representative to collect the taxes. And if you didn't pay the taxes, and individually, the governors could handle it. If you were a whole city like Sodom, and you didn't want to pay the tribute, the tax, you had made the agreement to do it, now you didn't want to do it, they'll send a whole army to make you pay the tax. And you'll get away with that. Unless Abraham's nephew lives in that city and you kidnap him too. And then you will have another force. And he will turn out with men who will defeat your army. And of course, that should give us some insight into what the future holds, because these patterns repeat themselves. But Nimrod was a mighty provider. The people became dependent upon that government. They were also corrupted, because that's a covetous practice. Idolatry is covetousness. Paul tells you that. Covetousness is idolatry. He tells you that over and over again, because it's a system that forces the offerings of the people. And so that was in Genesis 10:9 it talks about that. But also Terah, like I say, was an idolater because of the fact that he had this system that would force the offerings. And of course, when Abraham left that position where he would no longer be the king in Haran, And Nahor ended up taking it, and Laban took that position, or operated in that same way. And that's why we pointed out very clearly that when he went to shear his sheep, he found out that his idols, his statues, were gone. The emblems of his authority to shear the sheep, because he wasn't shearing sheep, he was shearing the people that were his possessions. And he thought of people as possessions, as human resources. They all did. That's what idolatry does. It turns the people into human resources. Bera, king of Sodom, he wanted them. He says, you keep this stuff, Abraham, but give me the people back. Why? Because the people belong to him. They're his. They didn't just live in that city. They were the human resources of that city. They're the ones who funded his army, even though his army took off running in the other direction when the enemy came. But anyway, so this is King Bera. The people were possessions. And like I say, Laban considered his daughters still belonging to him, even though he sold them to Jacob. Jacob paid him for it, but he had a difficulty in understanding that, because he thought that your right to own something was by his permission, and he could change the deal, kind of like Darth Vader. Pray I do not change the deal. He could change the deal because he had the power to change the deal. And this is what happens, because in that same Polybius quote, not only do the people degenerate into perfect savages when you set up these socialist systems, these progressive systems, but the rulers become more and more powerful. And the more power they get, the more intoxicated they get because of that power. So what all this is doing is it's, in essence, creating the one purse system that the Proverbs talks about. You know, the civil cauldrons, you know, let's build us a city, and the city will be our cauldron, and we will be the flesh. That's, again, having one purse. And, of course, that eventually leads to what the Bible refers to as cities of blood, where you're a human resource in the city. And people don't even see it. This is directly against the commandments of God, but they do it. So progressivism is absolutely wicked, absolutely evil, leads to the destruction of the people as well as their liberties, and it raises up tyrants. But it promises all those good things that you saw in the original definition, but that it actually delivers the absolute opposite of that. And so also I mentioned Abimelech, and if you look at the word for Abimelech, it means the father. It actually says that Melech is father, but what in the definition there on the page, it really is a poor definition. Melech has to do with king. What it's saying, the king is my father. That's really the way it translates. And that's what it means. And of course, Jesus said, call no man on earth father. So that would be interesting. We could have a no fathers rally. But we're actually talking about no political fathers. But there's no point in having the demonstration or rally unless you've actually repented and started doing things like John the Baptist and Jesus Christ and the apostles, where you create your own system of social welfare that is not dependent upon the rest of the world. And so, like I say, once the masses and their appetite for benefits at the expense of others and depend for their livelihood on the property of others, progressivism will seem moral. But if they accept that idea, that that's okay to desire benefits at the expense of your neighbor. And what that does is it separates you from your neighbor. It destroys the social bonds of a free society. So, you know, there's a lot more of this that I can go through. You know, like I have notes there on a page called Progressivism, where, you know, progressivism as a modern term seems to have emerged prominently between 1890 and 1920. I'd already put that together in another page about the modern history of welfare. And it goes down and it talks about Bismarck being the source of this original progressivism in the 1800s. And I thought it was interesting because I had just written just days before in my history of, the modern system of welfare, I asked a series of questions of Grok, and then I answer a lot of those questions, and I'm still working on it. But this idea of providing benefits through taxation, including public school, including lights on your public streets, including putting a sidewalk in front of your house. You want a sidewalk in front of your house, and you want that sidewalk to go all the way down the street. Then you guys have to work together to do it. People want to levy a tax on their neighbor. Now, if the sidewalk is in the right of way, maybe they could do that. But the reality, the best way to do that is to get together. And this is the way they did it in America. We built roads, we built hospitals, we built schools with voluntary contributions all the time. And when we moved away from that, our society began to decay and communities. I remember growing up in communities in San Francisco and LA and Houston. And, you know, in Houston, we knew most all of our neighbors. But by the time we got to places like San Francisco and L.A., you would not know half the people on your block. Most of your friends didn't live on the block. For 100 years in America, 200 years in America, in the cities, you knew everybody on your block. If somebody was robbing you, people would pour out of every single store, every single house to come to your aid. That's the way it was in Great Britain. It isn't that way anymore. And why isn't it that way? Progressivism and socialism and communism. And when you see somebody in trouble, you will, for a long time there, you would just see people turning around and going away. Now they'll stay long enough to get a video on their phone. But the idea that somebody's going to jump in and help you. And when somebody does, the government in your equity courts, because most of your courts are not common law courts anymore, they're equity courts. That's another whole discussion. You may think that's one of the things about equity. It can look like a common law court, but it won't smell like one. And even if you had common law courts, where are you going to get an honest jury? If everybody on your street is coveting their neighbor's goods through men who exercise authority, they're already immoral. They've already breached the commandments. And what does James say? If you break one commandment, you've broken them all. And so they're already on their way to social blindness because they don't want to see this. The Pope doesn't see it. Those cardinals and bishops that are speaking against Trump don't see it. Now, I don't know what Trump's got in mind as far as social welfare, but he did recently come out and say that really shouldn't be the job of the federal government. Individual social welfare should not be the job of the government. He did the same thing with abortion. He pushed it back to the states. Now, in the statements he made, he didn't say he was going to push it back to the states. But what if there was a movement, this may hinge on him not being assassinated, there was just another attempt. And there's a great deal of energy that wants to destroy him, not because he's a saint or he's sent to us by God, but he's just not playing ball with everybody else. And that's clear by what Doge was doing. Although he actually curtailed the efforts of Elon Musk to clean up the corruption. And I don't know what his actual reasoning for that was to Elon Musk. He's just like, do it. And I get it. I get his mentality. That's how he's gotten so many things done. He is a just do it kind of person. But the reality is that so much of our economy is dependent upon corruption. You'll find this in areas where the cartels run everything. That if you got rid of the cartels, half the businesses would shut down. It's a big part of our economy. And so what he's actually trying to do, very risky. But something may occur here. And I've seen it come to the surface and be mentioned several times. What if they legalized private religion? You could remove yourself from these systems that have brought you back into the bondage of Egypt if you have another system in place already. Now, they're going to try to make it state systems, undoubtedly, if we get that far. But what if a state system is not private religion, it's still public religion? And you can read an article on public religion. But you have to be ready to operate. And it doesn't work if somebody just wants to get out of taxes. It only works if you have the heart of Christ and the mind of Christ. And it will still probably be just as difficult as it was for early Christians. But I'm not predicting that that's going to happen, but that's a possibility. But I think that there needs to be, just like, when Moses came and started saying he wanted all these people to go with him out to the desert, I'm sure, well, we know that a large number of the Jews Israelites who were cast out on that day, where They were told to get out. Everybody did not follow Moses. Some went another way. And it would be the same way today. But I tell you, unless you go with the heart of Christ, you know, just like those two sons of Aaron didn't really have the heart of Christ. Back to that statement I said, mediator. When you give an offering to your minister and he puts it on the altar and shares it with his minister so that they can redistribute it in the, we'll even use their word, the most equitable way for, because in one congregation you have 10 families, that could be several hundred people, but in 10 congregations, that could be thousands of people. And so the reality is that that wealth might have to, that freely given wealth might have to be distributed in a lot of different directions. And in order to do that, you need to have an actual working system that cares about its neighbor as much as they care about themselves. And the funds come from the minister, but you cannot give the minister credit except for the little part of the job that he does, because he's not giving you his funds. He's giving you the funds that were given freely to him by the rest of society. You don't have it. He's just the guy who passes it forward. We've heard that movement, pass it forward. Somebody does something for you and that you want to pay them back, and they say, pass it forward. Great idea. Not very well organized, but great idea. But that's what you're doing in the tens, hundreds, and thousands, is that you give to men you know will make a good choice, a way of redistributing charity to strengthen the poor, not weaken the poor. And he is literally the guy that passes it forward. He doesn't get credit for giving out the redistribution. He gets credit for doing a good job in redistribution, but you know that the funds came from somebody else who willingly sacrificed. Now the heroes of society become the guy who is willing to sacrifice. That spirit is still around. We see that in the military. People who, you know, one of the youngest men to receive a Congressional Medal of Honor was also, he actually snuck into the Marines. I think he was 14 at the time during World War II. When they found out that he wasn't of age, I think he was by almost 16 by then, and the war was not at the end, it was still moving along, but he actually snuck and stowed away on a ship that was going to the front lines in the Pacific. And when he was finally found out, he admitted it. They threw him in the stockade, but then they put him on duty where he was driving truck, and he still ended up getting, you know, but he was 17 by this time, and he ended up being in the Battle of Iwo Jima, and ended up jumping on a grenade to save the other guys in a foxhole, in a trench. And he told them to run, and he jumped on the grenade, and it blew up. He didn't die. And he actually survived. He didn't die till like he was 80 years old. But he received the Congressional Medal of Honor. But there's a guy who was willing by his nature to sacrifice for others. We have lots of people who will do it. Sometimes it'll be somebody who will just take care of the elderly or take care of the sick and the invalid. And they're good at it. And other people, maybe not good at it, but they could support that work. But you're completely unorganized. Your churches aren't doing it. The Pope's not doing it. The Pope is trying to split the Catholic vote away from Trump, which is fine. He can do that. I'm just pointing out the truth of why he's doing it. And he's doing it to win favors with the Bank of England, who is being squeezed by the efforts of Trump in Iran and in the Gulf, and which is a part of his original plan, because The United States was on the verge of total bankruptcy, because that's the other thing that progressivism will do, is it borrows against the future. In order for this progressivism to work, you would have to create a Federal Reserve and a system of unjust weights and measures. Federal Reserve notes are unjust. Since we started this program, if you had any Federal Reserve notes in your wallet or in your pocket, they're worth less at the end of the program than they were at the beginning of the program. If you had gold and silver in your pocket, it would be worth more at the end of the program. Probably not less. But they needed that. They needed it for several reasons. We go into it in other places. But progressivism is progressing towards bondage, to make the masses merchandise. They're literally turning the world upside down. And Rome was doing the same thing. We've chronicled the history of them taking silver out of the silver denarii. 10% came out with Mark Antony and Cleopatra. Nero took out as much as 40%. And by Diocletian, there was no more silver in the coins. You've already got to that point. And now you're talking about the digital dollar. And that's fine if you want to go that way or people want to go that way. And it could have use in the interim. But ultimately, the only thing that will save you is to follow the ways of Christ. And the ways of Christ is to actually sit down in the tens, hundreds, and thousands, caring about your neighbor as much as yourself, not in a collective, one-purse, civil, political society that forces the contributions, but as in a society where the political power is in your hands. It's not about getting out of paying what you should pay into society to seek the kingdom. It's about regaining the responsibility to make the choice on how to give to society in a way that strengthens society. And I don't know if we got anybody who wants to go to questions. I see a number of people that are in the room. If you want to ask a question, ask for a mic and you can become a speaker. Yeah, one of the things about doing these X calls, we don't have a commercial. In a commercial, I can reorganize my thoughts and take a look and see where we're going. But I just thought, and I don't know that we necessarily need to put the full 2 hours into this, and we don't necessarily have to do a 2-hour show. 1-hour show would be enough. I would love to have more conversations with people that bring up intelligent comments. But, you know, like I said that, you know, we know that terror was an idolater. And we know that Colossians 3:5 say, mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, and covetousness, which is idolatry, for which things sake the wrath of God cometh on the children of disobedience. The system of progressivism, socialism, communism, social democracy, one-purse systems where you are not exercising your inalienable rights, but your government-granted privileges, that's the children of disobedience. That's not what God wants you to do. Now, you can do that. There was an Abimelech who was a pretty decent guy. I mean, he was not completely decent. He was stealing women and going to make them his bride, but he had a certain moral criteria to that. And when he found out she was already married, he realized, I can't do this. Of course, it helped the fact that they were breaking out in boils to make him aware of that. What was making him break out in boils? What power was moving through his whole family was suffering under this? And why is that? Was that strange fire? We talked about strange fire a great deal. I should do a whole show just on strange fire. You cannot be the children of disobedience without locking and loading the power of strange fire or the Holy Spirit against you. Will that wrath come all at once, or will it come in little things? Will you be blinded to this, blinded to that, blinded to, you know, like who I should marry and who I should not marry, and blinded to what I should eat and what I should not eat, and should I walk down this path or should I walk down that path? God will tell you the safe way to go. But you won't hear that. And you won't see that. You'll have scales on your eyes if you're the children of disobedience. And with some of the children of disobedience, it can get so bad that they cannot figure out anything. They cannot see what's going on around them. But like I said, that because of the increasing debt that has just been skyrocketing by design, and eventually, and countries going off of the U.S. as the petrodollar, and other countries developing trade groups that they could stay and keep functioning. We have a number of enemies in the world. China would like to see America destroyed. They've said this over and over again in their own speeches in their own countries, that they know they have to take America, or at least make America so that it cannot come to the defense of countries like Australia, etc., in order for them to spread out and become the imperial power they still want to be. Soviet Union, same way. Europe doesn't quite have those ambitions, but Europe is buying the Ukraine because of this war. These billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar loans to the Ukraine is against the assets of the Ukrainians. And the Ukrainian people will never enjoy the assets in their own country. It's a terribly mineral-rich, oil-rich nation. But it's also the poorest nation because it's the most corrupt nation. But it's also socialist. And as a matter of fact, the Nazi party has a lot of power in the country. But because there's wealth there, there's a lot of people who want power over that country, and they know the way to get it is to get the people to go the way of socialism. If there is suddenly a coup with the military that overthrows the IRGC, which is about the only way I could see them coming out of this, where there is an actual regime change, that even the people in the IRGC that might want to give more power back to the people and all this kind of stuff, they're not going to do it because there's enough radicals in the IRGC and in the Bejou that they would be assassinated. But if the Iranian military formed a coup, they might be able to restabilize the country in a very short order. But the problem will come, I mean, suddenly fuel prices will drop in America. There will be sudden prosperity and everybody will think, oh, we're saved. Trump can devalue the dollar. I don't think that they actually are thinking of devaluing the dollar, but they're going to make a dollar move. And they'll be able to do that because of the difficulties that the London banks are in, the Rothschilds are in, and all this stuff. He'll have leverage to do it if he survives that long. There's a lot of things at play. But if the Iranian people go back to the status quo of socialism, and they're very addicted, very intoxicated with socialism, they will perish in a worse configuration than you can imagine. Same with us. America needs to repent of socialism, repent of the covetous practices. Most of America will probably not do that. But those who are willing to do it and do it on a scale where they can see that it is possible, we sort of help them with their unbelief. There will be a hope for a portion of the people of this planet. But we will also face hard times because, like I said, I've said it in several programs, Evil will not go quietly into the night. This effort that I believe that Trump is trying to make, very dangerous. Where it will go wrong, God has not revealed that to me. But evil, like I say, will not give up. And in the same way with some of the other people that see some of the stuff that's going on behind the scenes, and because he's published a lot of this, they see it, but they don't see, you know, like one group, and Trump's, several of the people he's appointed have brought up Hamiltonian economics. People who have listened to me for a long time know that I'm no fan of Hamilton. But Hamiltonian economics could have its place for an interim. But if the people don't repent and do the opposite of progressivism and socialism, and actually do what Christ said, if people don't do that, Hamiltonian economics will not save you. Hamiltonian economics gave us just enough prosperity so that the fatal sequence, that we have an article, Fatal Sequence, you can look that up, kicked in.